A plant manager stands in his factory, watching millions of dollars worth of inventory gather dust while customers scream about late deliveries. Every machine hums with activity. Workers rush between stations. Efficiency reports show 90% utilization. By every traditional measure, the operation looks successful. Yet the division vice president has just delivered an ultimatum: turn this around in 3 months or we're shutting you down. How can a facility that appears so productive be failing so spectacularly? This paradox lies at the heart of one of the most transformative business books ever written, a story that reveals why our most cherished assumptions about productivity might be destroying our organizations. Alex Rogo's Monday morning shatters when Bill Peach storms into his office with devastating news. The plant has 3 months to survive. Before Alex can process this, their best machinist quits and sabotages their most critical machine, the NCX-10 that processes their highest margin orders. Their largest customer's order is already 7 weeks late. The timing couldn't be worse in Barrington, a town littered with abandoned factories and boarded-up storefronts, where Alex's plant might soon join the graveyard of failed manufacturing dreams. Through heroic overnight efforts, they ship the urgent order. But at what cost? Premium overtime, expensive repairs, disrupted schedules, and lost expertise. Despite modern equipment, skilled workers, and quality materials, the plant consistently stumbles. The pressure follows Alex home, where his wife Julie grows increasingly resentful of broken promises and endless emergencies. At 38, with an MBA and years of dedication, Alex faces both professional and personal collapse. Then he remembers a chance airport encounter with Jonah, a physicist who somehow knew the plant was struggling despite Alex's optimistic facade. This memory becomes his lifeline. Perhaps conventional solutions aren't the answer. Overlooking his failing factory, Alex confronts a fundamental question: what is the real goal? Not cost-effective purchasing. They're drowning in inventory, including a 32-month supply of copper wire. Not employment, quality, or technology. The goal is to make money. Everything else is merely a means to that end. With controller Lou, Alex identifies three financial measurements: net profit, return on investment, and cash flow. But how do these connect to daily operations? Jonah introduces three operational metrics: throughput, generating money through sales; inventory, money invested in things to sell; and operational expense, money spent turning inventory into throughput. Applying these to their prized robots reveals something shocking. The robots haven't increased sales at all. By focusing on robot efficiency rather than making money, they've actually increased costs without generating additional throughput. On a Boy Scout hike, Alex witnesses something transformative. Despite instructions to maintain position, the line steadily stretches. After 5 hours, they've covered only 5 miles, half the expected distance. Alex recognizes Jonah's two phenomena: dependent events, each boy moves only as fast as the one ahead, and statistical fluctuations, natural variations in speed. Together, they create a devastating effect. Slowness accumulates while speediness cannot. When someone slows, they create a gap that compounds permanently. Alex tests this with dice and matchsticks, where each boy rolls to determine matches moved forward. Despite identical capacities, inventory accumulates unevenly. After 10 rounds, they've shipped only 20 units instead of 35. The breakthrough comes when Alex spots Herbie, the slowest boy, near the back. By moving Herbie to the front and lightening his backpack, the troop's pace doubles. Alex's revelation: in any system with dependent events, the slowest element determines throughput of everything. Armed with hiking insights, Alex identifies their bottlenecks: the NCX-10 machine and heat treat furnaces. Jonah reveals that each bottleneck hour costs the entire system's operating expense divided by bottleneck hours. With monthly expenses of $1.6 million and the NCX-10 available 585 hours monthly, each hour costs $2,735, not just the $32.50 machine rate. Alex's team implements radical changes, quality inspectors before bottlenecks to prevent wasting time on defects, staggered lunch breaks to keep bottlenecks running continuously, and priority processing based on order lateness. Bob resurrects an old Smegma machine for some NCX 10 functions, increasing capacity. They dedicate staff 24/7 to heat treat furnaces, which had sat idle while workers were assigned elsewhere. Within weeks, they ship 57 orders worth $3 million and reduce inventory by 12%. However, releasing material faster than bottlenecks can process creates excess inventory and artificial bottlenecks elsewhere. The solution contradicts manufacturing orthodoxy. Control material release according to bottleneck capacity through a drum buffer rope system. This means accepting that activating a resource isn't the same as utilizing it. Running non-bottlenecks at full capacity simply creates excess inventory without increasing throughput. Alex's team discovers that reducing batch sizes dramatically improves flow, challenging traditional manufacturing wisdom. Conventional economic batch quantity formulas emphasize large batches to minimize setup costs, but testing reveals that cutting batch sizes in half increases setups while decreasing queue and wait times, significantly reducing total lead time. Bob worries about increased setups on non-bottleneck machines, but Alex applies Jonas principle. An hour saved at a non-bottleneck is a mirage. Non-bottlenecks have idle capacity, so additional setups don't impact overall productivity. Marketing director Johnny Johns offers customers 6-week delivery versus the industry standard 8 weeks. This creates an accounting paradox. Costs appear higher due to frequent setups, but this is illusion. They haven't added expenses. They've reduced inventory and increased sales, spreading fixed costs over more product. The strategy proves itself when a major customer needs 1,000 units within 2 weeks after their supplier fails. By further reducing batches and rescheduling, they win a $1 million contract impossible under their previous system. As Alex's plant becomes a division star, his team formalizes the theory of constraints, a 5-step process of identifying constraints, exploiting them, subordinating everything else, elevating constraints, and preventing inertia. They discover constraints evolve as systems improve, from physical bottlenecks to material release to market demand. When a French buyer offers prices below cost, Alex demonstrates a breakthrough. With spare capacity, only materials matter. A model costing $334.07 in materials that sells for $992 domestically still generates $366.93 profit at the French buyer's $701 offer. 20 years later, these principles transform organizations beyond manufacturing. Rob Kane at Dow Corning achieved 85% cycle time reduction and 70% inventory reduction. At General Motors, Kevin Coles found a bottleneck 20 feet from his office. Moving a supervisor's desk immediately improved throughput. Colonel Robert Leavitt cut Naval Air Depot helicopter maintenance from 200 to 135 days despite adding 30 days of work. Dr. Antoine Van Gelder reduced South African hospital waiting lists from 8 months to under 4. Teacher Kathy Swerkin even applied constraint theory to her classroom, an approach now used in juvenile detention centers. Alex's plant thrives, while his marriage crumbles. Julie's departure forces a painful recognition. He'd mastered bottleneck thinking at work while ignoring it at home. During reconciliation, Julie reframes their relationship as a system needing systematic attention. Daily dinners, phone-free family time, genuine perspective taking. The parallel crystallizes. Just as non-bottleneck resources subordinate to bottlenecks in manufacturing, less critical tasks must subordinate to relationships. At the library, Alex discovers Julie independently studying Socratic dialogues. Together, they recognize physicists and philosophers share an approach. Identify core phenomena, form hypotheses, derive consequences. This structured thinking applies equally to production and relationships. The theory of constraints transcends manufacturing. It's a universal thinking process for identifying what truly matters and systematically addressing limitations. Success comes not from optimizing components individually, but understanding how they function together toward common goals. The radical question remains, what's the constraint preventing you from achieving what matters most? Your factory, classroom, hospital, or marriage, they all have bottlenecks. Find them. Focus there. Everything else is noise.